Batman's the Joker. We all must laugh, cause we're all in this together, and we love to take a bath.
Guys, look, it's Timothy Chalamet.
That's me. Mm-hmm. How are you, man? It's been about, we only talk on podcasts now.
Yeah, I kind of just figured, you know, I'd save all my juicy gossip for the podcast and not actually be your friend.
That's the best way to, nothing's real unless you're podcasting.
Nothing's real unless it's recorded.
So last time I spoke to you was with David. Actually, you and I didn't really speak that time, so it was really
just kind of fucking told a story, bro.
It was story time with David,
pretty much.
So how have you been? What's your week been like? Have you been? You can't really go on hikes because they're all shut down.
They're all closed, man. I've taken to just walking around the neighborhood, but even that's getting fucking dangerous because like a lot of people in my neighborhood are out of work, so they're just literally just congregating outside. And, like, there have been reports of, like, not, like, robberies, but, like, people casing things. We had a guy literally this morning. I started opening up my windows because I found that if you put – because I have, like, a sheer curtain that diffuses light, you actually can't see in. So what I did is I've just had them open all day. And a dude just walked into my apartment complex and just started looking around. And I'm like – the fuck's going on? Like, I've never seen this dude in living here or anything. We're not renting in new apartments. Started looking around, like, not like looking around like, oh, this is a nice place, like looking around like, yeah,
like a peeping Tom
kind of. And then like he walked out. I was like, what? So yeah, that's it's weird, man. But
so yeah. How's your week been? What have you been filling your time with?
I've tried to kind of, I don't know. I do this. I was doing it during grad school, and I've kind of got back into it. Well, it's like a 90-20 rule where I do 90 minutes of productivity, just doing something, reading, working, you know, taking tests, that kind of stuff, and then 20 minutes of just nothing. So like, I've meditated once. That didn't really go well. I downloaded this app called Calm.
Yeah, my sister's using that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's kind of just good to just not do anything and be comfortable with not doing anything.
What's the idea for people who don't know what it is?
It's like a guided meditation almost, but it's stories, it's meditation. So like, it's a mixture between what I would call guided therapy and ASMR of people just like reading or doing things. There's this guy called the French Whisperer he has a very thick French accent and he just tells you a story.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Just a random story, or do the stories sort of teach a lesson, or?
It's usually like either like a fable or just like a short story.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then I binged all of Tiger King, Disney's Pixar's Onward, and season 2 of Altered Carbon over the weekend.
Of all that, what did you like the most? I watched, I want to say 3 or 4 episodes of Tiger King.
I'm going to ask you what you thought of it first.
Okay. Yeah, everybody's got a comment on Tiger King, apparently.
But I kind of want your... Because, like, from a filmmaking standpoint, absolutely loved it. But I'd love to hear your
sure, interpretation. Yeah. Yeah. Well, first I'll say that I resisted watching it for a while. Mm-hmm. And I had an initial attempt at watching it earlier on when the rave was really strong. And I watched, like, half an hour of the first episode. And I gave up because I have, like, a natural antipathy towards cringe. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's super cringe. Just, like, watching dumb people do things.
Yep.
Especially that animals are involved. Oh, really? Even if it's like satirical like that?
Nope. Hate cringe.
I don't watch The Office either, so maybe that's the same for me. Mm-hmm. I don't like dislike The Office, but I've never had the same like magnetism towards it that everyone else has had.
Magnetism.
Magnetism. Just add a few nez and tizzes.
There's probably something that is like that, but go ahead.
So I finally gave in a couple days ago and watched, I think, the first three, and then I watched the fourth one last night, I believe, and then I officially gave up about three quarters of the way through the last episode because it started getting a little too close for my liking to, like, showing just some animal type tortures. I mean, nothing too obscene, but there was some stuff that started. I just got a text from Brian. I'll just tell him real quick. We will send invite momentarily. Hold tight. Yeah, this episode was sort of focusing on Joe Exotic, the Tiger King guy, and the whole episode was more focused on him and how his alligator sanctuary was burnt down.
Studio and alligator sanctuary was burnt down by an arsonist.
But it looks like he probably did it himself. I would say 100%. Yeah.
He hired somebody for it.
Or that. Yeah, yeah. So anyways, I guess my take on the whole thing is the positive take, positive meaning what was valuable about even watching it to begin with, for me was it was interesting and intriguing to see a sort of microcosm, visually speaking, of what childhood trauma and psychological dangers correlate to in being an adult as far as the incessant need for controlling and abusing power. And that was like a very potent, I would say, visual articulation of that very thing, because there's lots of people abusing power in political ways right now and in society. But this was an interesting little microcosm of what that same thing looks like, but with really dumb people, uneducated people.
Yeah.
Because you can look at, what's her name? The woman who killed Carol Baskin. You know, initially when the episode about her potentially murdering her husband was going on, I initially kind of felt empathy for her because of her past. Like, it seems like she had a really shitty upbringing. She was extremely poor. She was raped by her neighbors.
Yeah.
And then her parents gave her no sympathy in that, and because of their evangelical, manipulative sort of upbringing, she was basically told, if her story's true, that it was her fault for being raped. So there's that, and then she runs away from home, has an abusive relationship, and has a child, and then runs away from that, and then is involved with this multimillionaire guy who is sleeping with a bunch of women on the side. So this woman from the get-go is not having a good life. So initially, when I found out that she potentially killed her husband, I was like, well, you know, he seemed to be like a fucking shithead. You know, he's sleeping with a million different women, and he got what was coming to him. It's karma.
Yeah.
But I mean, not to defend murder in any way, but I didn't. My initial reaction was not to sort of talk as much shit on her as everyone else has been doing. But to sum it up, they're all fucking psychopaths, and they all, it was a very interesting display of what, you know, childhood trauma can translate to, and the irony of it. And then I'll let you give me your opinion.
Yeah.
It's not even abstract, their use of power. It's obvious. They're literally putting other life forms in cages, and they are the master of their little microcosm societies they're creating. That's what's fueling them, is being the master of different entities of life. And then especially that guy who called himself fucking Bhagavad fucking Gita, whatever the fuck he called himself.
Bhagavan.
He called himself Bhagavan. Yeah. Lord.
Yeah.
He literally started a cult, and adapted Mormon, principles, and had many wives, and,
Well, that's, I mean, just Mormon. That's, I mean, he was using the kind of guru slash yogi abusive spiritual Hinduism for that too, because he was like, I mean, the woman who
It's not that it's not like Hindus have multiple wives.
There are certain sects in the Hindu. There's a
well, there's so many
thousand of sects of Hinduism.
And, well, but you could make that same correlation with Christianity-based religions, because Mormon is somewhat derived from Christianity.
Yeah,
it's just it's a sect, I suppose, of Christianity, one that allows for multiple wives.
Yeah. Yeah, my thing was like I didn't even consider the childhood trauma, but it was just it was a very interesting look into the kind of corporatization of power, like you just said, of just like these people have come from nothing and they will hold on to it and literally ruin people's lives and not even bat an eye. I mean, Carol Baskin had what, hundreds of people volunteering for her, and she put them in like levels of like the shirt color that they were wearing. I don't think you may have gotten to that episode.
No, I did. I saw that.
Yeah. And then Bhagavan did the whole thing with like young women, luring them into this like sex cult. And then Joe Exotic literally picks up people that are homeless on the side of the road and is like, you want a job? Yeah. I'll give you a start. Go live in this fucking trailer. Like, and as a person who is like, obviously not in the exact same situation, but I used to work at a baseball park in Cooperstown, that a lot of those functions were there. We had different shirt colors for different people. The interns lived on site in like subhuman conditions. Like, they didn't have fucking air conditioning and they weren't paid anything and they had to work 7 days a week. And there was this cult of personality surrounding the park's leader and his wife. And yeah, dude, I was watching this and I was literally seeing back the days where I was like, oh, like, I'm so glad I got out of that situation.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I feel like Carl Jung would have a field day with watching this type of a show, any of those psychologists, because it's a clear display of shadow work, meaning these people are all doing the same thing, and yet there is this rivalry amongst them, and especially between Carol and Joe Exotic. Their whole sort of show and life is based off of just like hate derived at each other, and there's this war amongst them. But that's just them facing their own shadows. They're just casting projections onto each other because they're doing the same thing. And they're all three of them, the three major characters, are using the same. It's interesting how they're all using tigers as the basis for their shadow to come out and play.
Yeah, I think you need to keep watching, because there's a guy who comes in as this, again, Jung would have a field day. He comes in as this kind of folk hero and lures Joe Exotic in as his savior. And then you find out he's not all he cracks up to be. I think you should keep watching it. Power through the next episode, because the next episode's a little hard. But when, I think his name's Joe Keery or something like that. Basically, and oh my God, Tom Segura made a joke. He's like, the outfits that these people wear are the best part of the show. This guy looks like every person I've ever met who's worn an Affliction t-shirt and then aged them 20 years.
This is the Jesus type archetype that comes in?
Yeah. His name's like Joe something. I'm going to look it up right
now. Two Joes, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's fascinating how this Joe Exotic guy, I mean, is the idea that one of those husbands of his isn't even gay, that he was just this like...
So it comes out like, again, double like, kid. Later, they're both
does it?
Gay. Like, literally, they go person by person as their interviews. Like, yeah, he wasn't gay. He was fucking this person. He was fucking that person.
Wow. Yeah, so it's unbelievable.
Jeff Lowe is his name.
Rob Lowe's brother?
No, thank God. But yeah, you want to get I want to
Brian in here?
I was gonna say Kenny. We'll get Kenny in here?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, feel free to jump in as much as you want in this one.
Well, thanks for letting me know.
Well, I mean, you're always welcome to, but Brian and I are old friends. And so if anything ever comes up, any questions to help orient the conversation, definitely feel free. So we're talking to Brian Zampella. Chris is going to get him on the – Chris is – I feel like we're Howard Stern. Chris is going to get him on the phone right now. Brian is a former NYPD officer, and he currently lives in the Bronx, I believe. I met him – he lived in L.A. for many years. That's how I know him. We did some acting together. We wrote several scripts together. He was my first and only to date writing partner. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit. He is also a man of real estate. He does well with that. But mostly, yeah, he just does real estate and he acts and produces and he lives in New York. So we're going to talk to him about some Corona stuff as well. How's it looking?
Your ex right now?
My ex? I'm the new girlfriend. I'm talking to my ex-girlfriend.
I feel like you're talking to an ex and like I'm your new girlfriend.
Like I'm explaining to you what my ex was like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll
well,
never be as good as Brian, you know. It's...
Well, they wouldn't be my ex if they were better than you.
Ooh, that's that. There you go. That's that seductress thinking.
I am the ultimate seducer.
I keep using my clackety clack keyboard instead of the regular one.
Clackety clack. So you sent it to him?
Yeah, I sent him the link. So we were having some issues before because he was using his phone working fine. And then we tried to install it on his laptop and for whatever reason it wasn't working.
So he's using his phone?
He's using his phone. I've instructed him.
That's two in a row. That's two podcasts in a row.
Well, David didn't have a computer.
Right.
Brian just I don't
2020.
Know.
I honestly just felt I just assume everybody has a fucking laptop.
Well, we're not all, you know, cool guys privileged from LA, you know. We've got new MacBooks.
Well, they don't need a new MacBook. They can have a PC from 99.
That wouldn't work.
So we're just waiting for him to click a button right now?
I guess. I sent it to him. I'll send him an email too, but
let's
this
see,
fucking guy ain't doing nothing, bro.
Cool, he said a while ago. How was Easter? What did you end up doing?
Nothing.
Well, yeah, obviously, I guess, but...
Hey!
Jackie Brown!
Jackie Brown?
Jackie Brown is Brian's alias. Oh, dude, he's in a robe.
He's wearing a fucking robe.
That's so funny because Chris thought I was in a robe, and I was like, you know what? We're doing the next episode in robes, but you're in a fucking robe because you're Jackie Brown.
If you think that I was going to get dressed for you two pricks, you got another big comment.
He doesn't even know me. He called me a prick.
I fucking love it, dude. You're just missing the fedora and the cigar, man.
Man, you know what? I wish I had a fedora. I got a top hat over here. But,
that's what it is. That's what it is, bro. I'm reading a book about the creation of the Federal Reserve, and you if you put that top hat on, you're absolutely one of the initial creators of the Federal Reserve.
Why the fuck are you reading that book?
Huh?
Why are you reading that
Paul
book?
Paul recommended it to me, and I just listen to everything Paul says.
I do anything Paul tells
What's
me.
What's up, bro? Good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you too. Good to see you too.
Oh, frozen. You were frozen at a nice profile, but you're back.
Nice. All right, good. I'm glad I'm back.
How have you been spending your quarantine? In a robe?
In a robe. A lot of robe. I wear bathing suits. So I don't have to go to the washroom. So I just wear the bathing suit. When I'm done with it, I wash it in the sink, hang it up, put another bathing suit on, wait for that to dry, then switch.
Love it. Minimum laundry duties.
I've been out of my house probably in almost a month, three times.
Fuck.
Are you by yourself or what's your situation right now?
Yeah, I'm by myself. I bought a place in Queens. Actually, where I live is the epicenter of the entire outbreak. I'm 10 blocks away from Elmhurst Hospital.
Did you think about getting out or were you just in it?
Well, I was taking this very seriously. Like, a lot of my friends were laughing at me. They were kind of like, they thought I was overdoing it. But it just didn't feel right. Everything felt strange. So I was doing a lot of shopping little by little. I was buying a lot of canned food. I was buying a lot of things. And then when it finally hit, I actually, for a second, I got a little nervous. I wasn't sure, you know, they were talking about closing New York City. So I actually thought about just getting an Airbnb, like in the middle of the country somewhere. I really toyed with that idea. I packed up my car. I had water in my car. I had food in my car. I was ready to get out of here. But then, you know, I'm not so good in the wilderness. So I'm more of a city dweller. So I figured I would just try to stick it out, whatever happens. This is like my environment.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So you're fully responsible for all your own shopping then. You've only been out three times. Are you doing like any of the like delivery systems or you're going out?
Not at all. Just I go out myself. Like, I'm probably going to go out. The last time I went out for food, I was dressed up like Morgan Freeman from Outbreak. I had the mask on. I had goggles on.
Can you pull up a picture?
Bro, I know, yeah. I don't have a picture, dude. Because I was, yeah, it's kind of
Chris is going to pull one up. I don't know the reference, so Chris is going to pull it up. We're going to see exactly how you looked.
Thank you, Chris.
So, wasn't he
the president during that?
Was Morgan Freeman the president in this movie you're talking about?
No, he wasn't the president. It was Dustin Hoffman and Morgan Freeman.
Right. And
yeah.
Deadly combo right there.
Dude, an incredible combo.
Here we go.
There you go. Not quite like that, but close.
Oh my god.
That's hilarious, bro.
Wait, hold on, ready? I did not know how this outbreak started. All I knew was I was not going to get the COVID.
That's it.
That's good, bro.
That's it. So
you go out and just buy as much as you can at a time.
Yeah, I was buying little at a time. I was planning for this. I was telling my friends, I think this is weird. I think you guys should start getting stuff. And all my friends from Queens were like, "Wow, you're overdoing it. You know, you're out of your fucking mind." Like, everybody thought I was kind of not. And I was thinking at one point, I was starting to think maybe I'm overdoing it. It just didn't feel right. The whole thing just didn't feel right. So I just little by little I got stuff, and I mean, I have tons of food. I mean, right now I'm probably going to go out, I would say, on Thursday, but you know, that's it. I mean, I've been out probably three times to go jogging, but at nighttime in a secluded park where there's no one around. So that's it.
Dude, that is insane that you are literally, you could not be closer to the epicenter of a virus that is contaminating the entire world right now.
Dude, it's insane.
I saw something earlier today. Okay, 500,000 Americans sick, 20,000 Americans dead. New York State alone has more confirmed cases than Italy. 18% of NYPD is out sick.
Yeah, it's insane.
You're a former NYPD officer. Do you have any? Do you keep in touch with anyone who's still in the what do you call it, the force?
Yeah. I spoke to somebody not too long ago. Actually, I spoke to a few people. You know, a lot of them. You know, they're a different breed. They, you know, like my one friend was like, "Dude, it's exciting." Like, all right, he's happy to be helping people and kind of running around like a maniac and
sort of like a purpose kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's exciting. I'm sure it's a kind of a...
I think we lost you.
No, he's still here. It's you.
Oh.
It's just me?
Yeah, it's just you.
Am I the one that's leaving?
Yes, it's you.
Okay, I think we're good.
It's you.
Yeah, it's always me. So, you were talking to some dudes and they're all just loving it? They're all in?
The guys I spoke to, they were pretty... You know, they're happy to help. It's exciting. They're, you know, that's just the whole atmosphere. So,
do you know anyone personally who has it?
So my cousin has it. Seemingly.
Joey?
No, not cousin Joey. Cousin Joey's good. He's healthy. Really? He's in LA. My cousin. I don't want to say his name, but
Tony.
Tony. Cousin Tony. But he apparently, I think they're still waiting. for the test, but he works in a hospital in Long Island, which is another hotspot. And apparently he has all the symptoms. He has a really high fever, everything. So they're thinking it's going to come back that he has COVID. My father was actually quarantined for 14 days because he was in contact with somebody who actually died from COVID. So he was
that through work or
no, down in Florida, actually. This was just he drove one of his friends home and the guy ended up dying a couple of days later from COVID. It was really insane.
Oh, man.
Jesus. Yeah, so they were in the same car together. So we were worried about that. That was very nerve-wracking for a couple
close,
of days.
Close friend of his?
I'm not a close friend. Just kind of like an acquaintance kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not a close friend, but obviously it's upsetting. And
is your cousin who has it healthy, or are they older, or can you say?
I mean, he's older. He's in his, I would say he's in his early 50s. He's a healthy guy, but you know, still, apparently he's pretty sick. I mean, he's not in the hospital. He's home dealing with it. But I know he had high fever, and it's supposed to be awful.
Fuck.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. I'll tell you one thing that's pretty insane. Where I live, it's just I can hear ambulances. Tons of ambulances. You never hear that here. I mean, I live in a pretty busy part of Queens, but my block is pretty quiet, and it's just constant ambulances. Like every couple of minutes you hear an ambulance throughout the night. It's pretty surreal. Pretty surreal.
Wow. Are you also hearing the like the pots and pans and the clapping and that kind of thing for the?
Yeah, they do that. They do that. Yeah, because I live in a co-op building, so everyone in the co-op kind of goes out and does that. I've done it a couple of times, and there's a lot of people that kind of, I don't want to say living on top of each other, but I'm going to say living on top of each other. Not necessarily in my building, but just in the area. So it's, there's a lot of people that live in this area.
What are you guys talking about? The pots and pans?
Like the people who are celebrating first responders and people working in hospitals. Have you not heard of this, Chris?
I guess I'm an asshole.
It's, you know how we've seen videos in Italy of them, like on balconies, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So New York's been like that as well.
Gotcha.
Yeah, actually, it was pretty cool. Last week they were they actually did it a few times. They played Frank Sinatra in New York, New York. So that was kind of cool. Somebody must have DJ equipment. They blasted it. That was kind of cool.
There's actually a lot of that going on. There's a dude in England who's been playing videos. So he has a projector and he's projecting it on the side of a building. And then he like posted something on the building as well, where he set up an FM radio station so people can listen to the movies as they're watching it.
Oh, that's cool. Like,
that's rad.
Classic movies.
That's really cool. That's awesome.
That's rad. So what have you been... how have you been staying busy? Where's your mentality? Are you like trying to be productive, or you're using this time to just relax? Where are you at?
I'm going to school right now. So I'm taking a bunch of classes, and I've just gotten pretty bombarded with work. I guess the teachers think they're doing us a favor by just giving us a lot of work. So every day I'm writing a paper. I actually just wrote a paper on, I analyzed a research paper from a study they did in China, which is actually pretty interesting. So this is pretty interesting. You might be into this. They did a study in China. I think their Facebook is called Wabu.
Wabu.
Something like that, yeah.
Isn't that their like phone? Wabu?
That's Huawei.
What is it, Chris?
Huawei is the phone.
Wabu, Huawei, yeah.
So they did a study when COVID, apparently when the outbreak, in the beginning of the outbreak, throughout the outbreak, they have these different algorithms and these different this technology that they monitor this Wabu, this social media, and it basically detects words that they detects words so that they can understand a sentiment, like how the population is feeling about the information they're getting from the government, basically.
That's fucked up.
It's a strange thing, because it's like, how do you you can't measure an emotion because it's a conceptual kind of variable. So instead they attach a word. So they're basically measuring words in a way to try and measure emotions and how these people are feeling. And obviously this paper wasn't, it didn't have, I think it's insidious. You know, I can see how it can be done in a, how that can be weaponized very easily.
Sure. So what was it? Is it like an opinion piece you have to write?
Just kind of analyze it. You know, just a simple analytical paper. I went dark with it, but I don't think we'll see how that goes.
What it could ultimately come to with that technology, kind of thing.
Absolutely. How it can be weaponized. I mean, because you got to think about this. If one population is, if they're doing this and they're measuring the emotions, how one set of the population is feeling, and then they measure this portion of the population or region or location, however they do it. Now, one is having this anger and frustration, maybe dissonance. And this other one, kind of, they're ascertaining that their emotions are of loyalty and they're content with what's going on. Who's going to get the goods? Who's going to get the assets? Who's going to get the funding? Who's going to get all the help? I don't know, you know? So it could go that way. It's interesting. And to think that they're not doing that here, it's, I don't know, you know?
It's just not publicly known here that it's going on.
Possibly. I'm not sure. Possibly. I don't know. But so, it's definitely happening there.
I actually stumbled upon, because I was looking at a similar thing to that. I got really bored over the weekend when I wasn't watching Tiger King, to get into like how other countries are dealing with this crisis. And it's interesting to see South Korea's response and Taiwan's response. Because, I mean, obviously they have, I'm not going out on a limb here saying this, they have a lot more restrictive bits of like freedom in terms of like how you interact and communicate and everything. In Taiwan, if you arrive at an airport, they test your temperature to see if you're running a fever. I think it's mandated that you have to download an app, or maybe they're just tracking you, but they track your movement. So they basically say, like, if this person has a registered temperature of like 101, they're like right on the cusp of getting it or something like that, they'll track your movement and will do a probability analysis of how likely, if you did have the virus, how many people you would interact with. And then like they're tracking, much like what you said about resources, like if there's a higher population density that doesn't have it, they'll quarantine them, be like, you guys are healthy. And then they'll send resources to those who might be at risk.
Yeah.
Do like checkups on you. So you get a text being like, how are you feeling today?
So do either of you have any kind of conspiratorial beliefs that, much like, 9/11, like maybe this isn't something that was necessarily orchestrated, but is being taken advantage of for some sort of beginning stages of whatever technology that might be that is looking to be implemented in the near future, whether that be a social media type technology, a surveillance type technology, a microchip technology, anything like that. How have you been thinking as far as why this is going on, whether that's intellectually speaking or spiritually speaking, Brian?
Oof, that's a heavy question.
I mean, it doesn't have to be anything that's been cemented in your mind, but have you had any thoughts that's like, why is this all happening?
Yeah, I do not think this came from a bat. I do not think this came from a bat.
You don't? Okay.
No, I do not think it came from a bat. I believe that it accidentally escaped from a laboratory. And I believe that the response of China afterwards was to try and cover up their mistake. Whether they actually made a mistake or whether there was some kind of sabotage, I don't know yet. So, you know, we'll have to see about that. But definitely a lot of people are going to take advantage of this for sure. Absolutely. It's in so many ways. I mean, politically, technologically, I mean, you're going to see, you know, people with money, buy up companies and buy up stocks. And yeah, I mean, definitely our freedom, real estate, and our freedoms are going to be, it's going to be more difficult to travel. You're going to have some type of vaccination card once they have the vaccination, for sure, 100%.
Some kind of identification system will be put into place.
Absolutely, and it's not too far-fetched. Like for instance, I actually have I had to get vaccinated for yellow fever because I was planning on going to Africa from Brazil. So I have a yellow fever card in my passport, basically saying that I'm vaccinated from yellow fever, so I can go to certain countries. So when for someone to say that we're probably going to have the vaccination card, that's really not too far-fetched that you're going to have a COVID-19 vaccination card.
That's, now, do you just see that as an inevitable sort of outcome of an overpopulated world? Like, inevitably, at some point, this type of implementation is going to occur as far as all these identification codes? Or do you see that there's money in that, and so it behooves certain nefarious groups to make these things come about? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, we're talking very abstractly, and it's a difficult conversation to have, but we can,
sure, you know,
we can have it. I mean, we can just wing it and just kind of people. You know, it's interesting, you think about, you just, we'll talk, I'll kind of talk about evolution right now. You talk about Darwin, and you talk about, survival of the, kind of the fittest, which I don't even think he necessarily said that. I think it was just, these adaptions to survive, you know? And then Friedrich Nietzsche said that, it was adaptions for power. It's an organism has adaptions to overcome and to actually be dominant. So you think about this will to power. So I already believe a lot of our leaders are mentally ill. We're talking about sociopaths. We're talking about psychopaths. And at the very least, narcissists. So you're talking about people who very much want to control and manipulate. That's their personality. So this is a way to control. So control is in the best interest of a lot of people. There's many people that their goal in life, in any way, in relationships, in business, and in any way is to control in any way they can.
It's interesting because before we called you in, Chris and I were talking about Tiger King, and I was telling him how I struggled with even convincing myself to watch it to begin with, but I was pleasantly surprised at how it served as a sort of visual representation of what these psychopaths and sociopaths that our leaders are, that you're referring to, of what the motivations might look like behind somebody who has this incessant need for power and control. It just so happens that these people on the show are uneducated and dumb. So it's a different level of use of power, but these people on Tiger King are literally putting species in cages, taking advantage and having monetary gains based off of what they're doing there. And also within the sort of microcosm of societies that they're creating around them. You know, have you seen Tiger King, Brian?
I've seen it, yes.
Yeah, so you know, you got one guy convincing straight men to be gay with him. You got one man who is having 9 wives and sort of, entering people's psyches. Go ahead.
It's interesting. The way that I was listening to this, I think her name's Dr. Romani. I hope I didn't, ruin this, but I was listening to a podcast by her, and she kind of described like the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath, that the sociopath is the guy, the bar fighter, the guy who kind of gets into the fight at the bar. And then the psychopath is the guy who 4 days later kills the guy he got into the fight with. So it's interesting. So we look at like a Carol Baskin kind of character. She would be more of a psychopath if you believe she killed her husband. She's a very calculating, manipulative, person, kind of playing a victim role and just antagonizing. And that's kind of her tactics to gain power. And then if you look at this other maniac, he's more of a sociopath. Yes, he's manipulative, but he's just not as cunning. He's not as intelligent. And he's super dangerous. He's manipulative. I mean, he's done terrible things. He's gotten these, this guy's addicted to meth and, you know,
and Dick.
Yeah. I mean, just Dick.
That's the secret to power, meth and Dick.
There you go. Meth and Dick. Absolutely.
It's a dangerous combination.
Got that meth Dick.
Yes.
Did you see that? I guess to pivot slightly, have you guys seen that the mayor of LA is asking for people to snitch on people who are not obeying the social distancing orders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. You know, that's like next level shit, man.
It's weird, man. And we're getting into a very strange zone.
Repeating of history, I would say, of 20th century Eastern Europe.
Yeah, it's just too much.
Chris, you make that face, but it's the beginning stages of that kind of a thing.
I don't think we're going to see Gestapo, though.
Well, I mean, I'm talking, you know, gulags. The gulag started with this type of thing of snitching. That was the beginning of the gulag.
Yeah, the gulags were put into place to house ethnic and political prisoners. It wasn't people disobeying a stay-at-home.
No, that couldn't be further from the truth. The
gulag in Eastern Ukraine and stuff like that that Stalin sent them to? Or are you talking pre?
Yeah, the gulag archipelago.
Okay.
These were people that were not obeying the ideology that was put in place. There were serfs, people who were profiting off farming, who were doing all the work themselves, mm-hmm. who were deemed a danger to this social communism that was being put in place, that were thrown in these camps because they were making too much money, even though they were not bothering anyone else. I mean, it wasn't just people of ethnic races. It was most of society. And it all started with this type of thing. It's like, either you choose to play for us and you're a snitch, or you're going to be thrown in.
I just don't think you can make the comparison to the gulag and the treatment of people under Stalin's rule than to now. I wasn't making a
direct comparison. I was saying it's just something that you want to avoid because
it's divisive. It's divisive. It's very divisive. And you're kind of, sure. you're dividing people in really who obeys and who is not obeying, you know, like who's obeying the government and who is not obeying. And to what extent are they not obeying? Are they not obeying that they're causing harm to others? That's a debate.
The scary part of all of that is that if the ideology behind it is that if you're fighting for good, then what matters is the outcome, not the path. And that's a very dangerous mindset to have, because like the major atrocities of the 20th century that we're referring to were carried out by men who thought they were creating utopias. And a lot of people on the left right now, this PC culture and all that kind of stuff, they have the idea that they're like angels sent by God to create some kind of utopia. And that is the beginning stages of something like a gulag.
I mean, I agree. I think there's unrealistic expectations on both sides, but on the left, you know, more so, I would say for sure.
What do you mean? It's a solid question.
I just love the tone of it. It was like, what do you mean?
I would love to hear your reasoning, because that's a very
let's unpack it.
Let's unpack it. You look at somebody like Bernie Sanders. You know, I was approached by a woman who was trying to get me to vote for Bernie Sanders. I was listening to what she was saying. Mm-hmm. I was listening to everything she was saying. I mean, when I got done listening to what this woman was saying, I mean, it sounded like this guy was going to solve every single problem that has ever happened through the government. like I'm just going to vote for this man. He is going to take about 85% of my money, And the government is going to facilitate this utopia that's going to happen. And that's, I mean, you're putting a lot of faith and trust in this man that he's going to fix your life through monetary means, through basically really objects or objects given to you. I mean, I know people with a ton of money. I know people, they're not happy, you know? So it's a strange thing. I mean, Bernie Sanders is pretty much equating happiness to money.
I don't agree with that.
In a way.
I hear where you're going with that, Brian. Well,
let's play with it. It's a difficult. Yeah. It's difficult.
The thing that we should keep in mind, I think, before necessarily judging what Bernie's ideas are, is that it's like a pendulum and it's swung a little bit too far on one side, perhaps. And so in order for it to maybe find a middle ground, the approach and the ideas sort of proposed initially might, I think, and bear with me here, have to be proposed in an extreme other way. And then maybe some kind of middle ground is found. I don't know that Bernie gets elected and solves everything with money, but maybe some things that are being taken advantage of are brought a little more to the center than all the way on one side of the pendulum. Does that make sense?
I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, to me, it just seems unrealistic. What he's saying is just unrealistic. It's unrealistic. I don't know. All right, you here you go. Here's free school. Is that going to make you happy? I mean, what's going to make you happy at this point in time?
Is what he's preaching happiness, or is it just equality of opportunity? I suppose. Not equality of outcome necessarily, but equality of opportunity.
How is he preaching? He's talking about redistribution, and he's demonizing people who are doing well.
Yes, for the specific point that because they are doing so well, that their workers and the people that they exploit are being pushed further and further into poverty. And I think we in order to continue this, I think we need to take a step back and look at the person who will go out and campaign for Bernie. And a person who will go out and campaign for Bernie definitely has a very warped idea of his values. And I'm not saying that we should give them the benefit of the doubt because I don't actually personally know the man. I don't actually personally know the person who came to your door. But if you look at, and I always think about this when they show people at Trump rallies, they're not going to show the person who's a moderate. They're always going to show the person who's 300 pounds wearing a MAGA hat that's got salsa stains on their, you know, fucking locker up t-shirt. Mm-hmm. You're always going to show the extremes. You're never going to show the person who is actually a very intelligent person and is just doing it because most of their values or the vast sum of their values match up with the candidate. We live in a world of ideologues. Someone who is going to vote for Bernie can be someone who is a moderate Democrat that might just agree with some of his policies, or they're going to be the person walking in the street with 26 genders who, you know, wants everything handed to them.
Like, yeah,
there is a gamut of people who
will vote for that person.
And maybe that person that came to your door thinks that everything's going to be handed to them and is using Bernie's,
I think that's a good point, Chris. I think that's a good point because that person who's arguing for Bernie might not be an accurate representation of Bernie.
Yeah, and for the opposite too, someone who's voting for Trump and, you know, is a steel worker who got laid off their jobs and thinks that America's going to go back to the manufacturing of the 50s, when that is just not the case. Like, it's a pipe dream of your own making.
That's true. I would definitely agree with that. It was just very interesting. Like, I'll kind of talk more about that interaction that I had because I think it's interesting. It was actually at school. So I was approached, and it was me, and I was sitting with a bunch of, you know, younger students. You know, I'm definitely older. Yeah. And she was kind of like, oh, like, how much do you pay for school? How much do you pay for school? So these kids were paying not that much because a lot of them are getting aid already. I mean, a lot of them are the one girl, I think she said she's paying $1,500 for the semester. You know? Then she's like, you think that's too much, right? You think that's too expensive, right? And the girl's like, yeah, absolutely. I think that's too expensive. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And this other kid was paying maybe, you know, $1,000 for the semester. One kid was paying $2,000 for the semester. And I was being quiet. And, you know, she's just kind of, yeah, you think that's expensive too? Yeah, yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. That's ridiculous. Like, and she's getting these people pumped up. And, you know, she comes to me and she's like, you know, well, don't you think that like you shouldn't have to pay for school? And I'm like, I'm paying way more than all these kids for school because I don't qualify for any of these grants. But I'm shocked at how little these kids have to pay. For me, it's so strange. Like, you're not even paying that much money for school. I mean, for a semester for school, you're paying $2,000 for a semester. So basically, you're saying you're paying $4,000 a year. So if you were to get a bachelor's degree, you would be spending $16,000. An investment in yourself. And this is pretty much what I told the woman. She got really, really angry with me. And she's like, oh, wait till you have kids. I said, well, that's why I don't have kids. I'm not trying. I don't want to live above my means. Maybe if you have kids, maybe you shouldn't have had kids if this was going to be upsetting to you. Or maybe you should tell your kids to come to the school that I'm going to, because I'm going to a SUNY school. Maybe they shouldn't be going to this very expensive school. So, you know, that, I mean, and that was pretty much the gist of the conversation.
There's also, you make some good points there. There's also systems in play that it was recently brought to my attention, that in LA, for example, I'm not sure how it is nationwide, but in LA, if you're over the age of, I think it was 30, but it might've been 28 or 29, you can get paid to go to certain community colleges. Right now, if I wanted to go to Santa Monica Community College, yeah. I could get paid. Literally, it would be like a sort of EBT debit card type situation. It's not much money, but if I took a certain amount of credits, if I met a certain criteria, yeah. I made less money than whatever that cutoff is, then I would be sent, you know, whatever it is, $600 a semester to take care of. Because the idea is that you're taking so many classes that you can't have a job at the same time.
Yeah, yeah,
so they
yeah.
give you $600 a month, a semester to take care of textbooks, gas, and food type stuff. And then you go to school for completely free if you're old enough.
I mean, I think there's a ton of... There's a ton of programs out there already for a lot of people, and I don't know.
There's also my friend Matt, my friends Matt and Mary, who are a married couple living in Boston, who've been in debt since they got married about 9 years ago, paying off their student loans, and their loans were unbelievable, and they've been living so scrupulously for the last 9 years, and they just paid them off about a week ago. So yes, maybe they went to colleges that were a little too expensive. And maybe that ultimately is on you if you choose to do that. You know, it's like adopt some responsibility for the choices you make. But Brian, when you make those choices, you're like 19 or 20 years old. And you're sort of doped into doing things like that.
I 100% agree, and I am not heartless in this. Totally feel bad. You know, I mean, I don't know what to say, but I mean, you...
No, I feel you. I don't have an opinion here. We're just talking, you know.
At 19, you know, when I went to community college, I graduated from a community college, and, you know, at the end of the day, like, I knew I wasn't going to go to this very expensive college. It just didn't make sense to me. I was going to go to 2 years of school, and I was going to get a job either as some kind of city job, or I was going to be some type of a laborer, or I was going to be some type of a construction worker. That was the reality for me. That was the decision that I made. You know, some people want to go to school, you know, 4 years away, you know, go to school away, spend all this money on school and housing and have this huge debt. I don't know. I feel bad for you, but then it becomes other people's responsibility because you made a decision. I don't know. We can talk about that. We can play with that.
So this, we're getting in some pretty heavy shit right now. I'm going to say that out loud. But so my thing heavy. Is,
we can play with it. I'm not trying to.
I'm not saying we should stop it. I'm letting the audience know that we know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So I've come at this from a couple different standpoints. I was in the higher education world for a very long time. I have a master's degree that is completely useless to me right now. Mm-hmm. After I got that master's degree, I could not find work. So I went into a laboring trade and learned more about the workplace, learned more about just life in general and what quote unquote real people do in the first 4 months of working that job than I had in my entire career. Having worked as a college person, having worked for the staff of a college, I can say that is definitely true for the vast majority of young college students, that there is kind of a wake-up call that needs to happen in terms of how the world actually sees you and how you exist. Whether that is a product of our society as a whole, because we've built this kind of, not ivory tower, but like ivory walls around these institutions where it's like, you're safe here, you're great here. And then it's kind of a kick in the ass when you're like, oh, those money that I had coming in from, you know, the Pell Grant or FAFSA or whatever institution that I signed a loan with, the day after you graduate, they're going to want money. Mm, sure. So like, I mean, I've always kind of had the opinion like that we need some sort of compulsory service in this country, of not necessarily military service, but like, you know, people to be EMTs, to be, you know, low level laborers, where it's just like everyone kind of starts off at the same level, because it's really unfortunate that the wealth divide in this country really separates us in a vast like way, because someone from Beverly Hills obviously is never going to have to worry about paying for a college loan. They're never going to have to worry about working two jobs to put yourself through college because mommy and daddy will take care of it. If you put them in a situation where they have to work next to someone who is a first generation American, who has to see people at home, it gives you that level of perspective, of that level of like appreciation for what you fucking have. Cause like, and I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, I came from a poor neighborhood. Like I came from a place of great privilege and I'm very happy that I did. But at the same time, like my upbringing was augmented by the fact that, you know, at a certain point, my parents were like, no, you're going to have to fend for yourself. Mm. Like, and we're kind of talking around circles about this, but it's like, there needs to be some sort of equality that happens in that sense of like, there needs to be an understanding that fast food workers are, it's a unskilled position. Mm. If you want to get a skilled position, you have to work for it. Like people at my job are like, you know, why don't I get 40 paid sick days a year? Like the full-time people, it's like, cause they're full-time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. There's definitely some delusion there. Absolutely. And then there's a lot of bad parenting. You know, there's a ton of bad parenting.
Which comes from uneducated parents.
Or for people who can't parent because they're working a couple jobs.
That also, but I think just people don't learn how to think. It's strange. Yeah,
I think I agree, but again, going back to, you know, like what's going to be that initiatory sort of force that even puts you in a position to want to learn how to think? Or even education. The position to think that that's a good idea to learn how to think, you know, because that's a motivating factor that not many people are even in the realm of being pushed into. And so I think the idea here is not so much the extreme fear that you're maybe worried of, Brian, and that I am too, which is that we're just going to hand out lollipops to everyone and everything's going to be great. That's not necessarily the idea here. But there could be steps taken a little bit towards that, in the sense that maybe healthcare could be a little bit better. Maybe education could be a little less expensive or more accessible.
I mean, yeah, I think, I mean, I definitely could be improvements for sure. For sure. But there's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on. There's a lot of demonizing people. It's, you know, sure, people are making a lot of, and we're doing it too. We're making these like blanket statements. I mean, you'd have to, I mean, like your friends, I have to look at their individual situation to kind of come up with, well, you know, well, what did you do wrong here? What did you do wrong here? Well, maybe this wasn't your fault. I'd have to look at it. But just to make this blanket statement that it's, you know, they're just not good. And they're being, for us, it's not a big deal for us to make these kind of statements. We're in dialogue right now. But these statements are being made on a national stage. And people are getting very angry. And you're having a lot of divisiveness in this country because of people getting up there and just demonizing landlords, you know, or demonizing, you know, people with money or demonizing people with privilege, whatever that means. I don't even know what that means. Because I think of it like this. I can give you $1 million and that could be the greatest thing that happened to you. Greatest thing that ever happened in your life, give you $1 million. But that could also be the worst thing that ever happened in your life. I can give you $1 million, you could buy a Corvette and fucking wrap around the tree and be paralyzed for the rest of your life. You know? So, you know, I look at that, it's interesting. That's why I'm trying to be more measured and balanced in what I say. And when I say something, I want to be decisive. But then again, there's a lot to think about. I can kind of see
so much to consider. I can see
Bernie's side, even though a lot I disagree with, and you know, like it's. I can kind of see it. I don't want to sit there and demonize the guy, and you know, I don't want to demonize your friends because then I'm making a blanket statement. Maybe your friends have a legitimate right. Maybe something happens. Maybe they should get some help. So
I think that's a great aspiration, and I'm doing the same because I don't necessarily subscribe to any of the ideas that I'm proposing right now either. We're just in dialogue, like you said. But I think a big part of the divisiveness that you're speaking to is sort of the result of like a lack of empathy, but more like a Manichaean struggle. Meaning like a dualistic cosmology that's been subscribed to, like the idea that there is just black and white. There is just all that life is this Manichaean sort of struggle between the spiritual world of light and the material world of darkness. And there's no shades in between. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe the reason why a lot of these ideas feel so divisive and why so many people get so angry is because they are a little too black and white. And maybe the answer is somewhere in between everything that's being proposed. There's some kind of shade within between that light and that darkness. And
short of 50 Shades of Grey.
There's an essay by the social psychologist Roy Baumeister, I think his name was. It's called The Myth of Pure Evil. You should read it, Brian. You would dig it. But the general ideas behind the myth of pure evil is that like evildoers are pure in their motives, like they're sadists, or it's just greed. It's just and then victims are pure in their victimhood. And they didn't do anything to bring about the circumstance they're in.
Yeah.
And that evil comes from outside your group. You know, like you're a group that's being attacked by another group. And anyone who questions the myth of this pure evil and dares like muddy the waters of moral certainty is in league with evil, pure evil. And that just pure evil thing doesn't really exist. That's like lightning in a bottle. You know, there's like shades there, like, and I think that ultimate sort of self-serving bias, this is it right here.
Interesting. I gotta check it out. It's weird because if you're always contemplating and you're never really, you know, I'm not sure this way, I'm not sure that way, you're always kind of pondering and just thinking about things, it's looked at as weakness in this society. It's looked at as you're not decisive in your decisions. But in a way, it's kind of good when you're thinking about things, because you're not moving, you're not reacting. And whenever humans are not moving that much, it's a good thing. You know, there's not as much violence, and there's not as much much hurt being dished out when you're kind of thinking, when you're in contemplation.
The Taoist principle of inaction is a choice, I think, is something that you're talking about right now. It's like,
yeah,
you either have to do something or not do something. The idea of being in the middle is something that we can't accept.
Yeah, it's something that people can't accept. It's actually looked at in a negative way. It seems like people who are narcissistic and people who don't really consider this gray area that we're kind of talking about, they're the ones who get all the accolades. I mean, the ones who get up there and pontificate and like, this is black, this is white, and this is the way it's going to be. And once we do it, I got you. Get, come over here. It's like the confident ape, you know, it's this confident gorilla, you know, just like, yeah, just get on my, and everything's going to be great. You follow me and everything's going to be great. Maybe, I don't know, probably not. Maybe sometime it's going to be good. Maybe one day it's going to be good. The next day it's not going to be good. I don't know, ultimately, like what's going to be good. I kind of go back to my $1 million. I give you $1 million. Yeah. It could be the greatest thing ever. You could invest it. You could put your kids to school. Everyone could be happy, live a happy life. Or you could get the $1 million and, you know, kill yourself, you know, or get seriously injured in a car accident. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's that sort of principle of like the hedonistic treadmill, is it called, the hedonistic treadmill, like eventually, like money's the idea that was it Ecclesiastes, was that the dude who tried everything, Ecclesiastes,
you're right,
so like he tried everything, he had woman, he had fame, he had glory, he had wine, yeah. And you know, he was on the hedonistic treadmill, you know, yeah. he was moving, but he wasn't getting anywhere, and then eventually he had that sort of midlife crisis where he was like, oh, there's none of that shit. Epicurus. One of those epis.
Love Epicurus.
Yeah, Epicurus.
He said the only three things you need in life to be happy is you need to, one is leave written works. One is go into nature. And the other one is, be financially frugal.
Oh, really? That last one surprises me.
He said three things to happiness or contentment.
Actually, I guess that makes sense. Is don't put so much constraint on saving money, because
I'm looking that up right now. I think that was a later teaching. So he thinks that the three things I'm looking up right now are friendship, freedom, and thought. So freedom, we must be free of the prisons of everyday affairs from politics. We need to have the wisdom of our friends. Before you eat or drink anything, carefully consider who you eat or drink with rather than what you eat or drink with. And thought. There are a few better remedies for anxiety than thought. Writing down a program, airing it in conversation, or letting essential aspects emerge. For instance, by careful examination, one can discover that there's nothing to worry about death. There's nothing dreadful in life, for a man is truly comprehended that there is nothing terrible in not living.
Hmm. That sounds like something different from what you were talking about then.
I mean, I feel like I read somewhere he said that. I, you know, like I said, I don't know. But I believe, you know, they both could be correct.
Dude, you're constantly do you make it a point to post stoicism every single day? I feel like you do. Like post every day.
I mean, I don't make it a point, but I love the quotes. I mean, I love them.
They're great. I love them.
They're so powerful. They're so simple. They're just potent, you know, it's simple kind of, just this simplicity that we're talking about that just makes you happy.
Marcus Aurelius, Seneca, these guys.
I mean, I'm pretty happy, like just with a cup of tea, just writing, you know, in my notepad by myself, and there's a lot of happiness there. So, you know, it's, I mean, it sounds corny, but there's a lot of happiness there. In the past,
the mad thinker. or the Mad. What's your new name? The Mad Thinker.
Mad Thinker. Yeah. That's something I'm playing around. I'm playing with. But it's in the past I wouldn't have thought that was happiness. In the past I would have said this is like a waste of my time, or you know, when am I going to do something else, or this was just something I did because I was bored or something. Now it's like I can't wait to just like think, you know, or just like write, or just sort of simple things, you know. In the past, I wanted to go on vacation, and you know, I wanted to live like in
external
in Malibu, and you know, I wanted to hang out with all these cool people, and I wanted to do all these things and make all this money, and I put so much stress on myself, and it's insane. And really, I'm no happier than I am now. That my life is a lot simpler, and I'm probably more happy now. For the moment, I don't know where that's going to go. But for the moment, right now, it's a lot of contentment. So, yeah.
To pivot slightly, you spent some time in Brazil, right? Recently?
Yeah. Love Brazil.
You were there for a while. What were you doing over there?
A month. I was actually writing a book.
Oh, okay.
Writing a book. You know, hanging out. I have a lot of friends in Brazil. I trained some jiu-jitsu when I was down there, so that was cool. It's a beautiful country. I love it down there. It's amazing.
How's your body holding up? I know we both suffer from some ailments.
Dude.
Brian has
not great. I tell people, I say I'm an old 36. I'm a very old 36.
That's highway
miles. Dude, I'm an old
city miles.
I'm an old 30, so I feel you, bro.
I was an old 29, and I was an old 28 as well.
Were you?
I'm telling you, man. I don't know what. Just injuries and just I don't know. Just
So were you? You're still able to roll though? Like I would never be able to roll. You're still able to roll?
I mean, yeah, a little bit. I mean, definitely not as nowhere near as good as I have been in the past. You know,
I'm sure it's like a stressful. It's a stressful situation.
Sure, there's positions I have to give up at times and things of that nature. But I love it. It's great. It's good for my mind. Kind of relate it to life. You know, it's a struggle on the mat, kind of metaphorically struggle in life.
Yeah.
So it's a good. I also like the fact that a lot of the, I believe some of the greatest men in history were wrestlers. You know, like Abraham Lincoln was a wrestler, Marcus Aurelius was a wrestler. So I there's something to it. There's something to grappling, you know. It's obviously I'm not comparing myself to them, but I
sure.
You know, it's
the physical enactment of internal battles, like juggling for being able to handle lots of many thoughts at once, or being able to think, or the cubics, whatever those called, cubic squares,
Rubik's
cubes, cubic squares,
cubic squares.
And then jujitsu and wrestling. Yeah, the
camaraderie of the people. It's like, well, one minute the guy's trying to kill you, the next minute you guys are great. He's teaching what he just almost killed you with, you know. So it's a humbling effect. Yeah, the humbling effect. It's an interesting dynamic. I think more people should be involved in physical kind of controlled combat. I think it would be good for people, actually.
I bet you 99% of PC culture have never been in any sort of physical exertion type not physical altercation, because that could just be a fight, but
yeah, control
the exertion of primal energies kind of thing.
No, I agree. You know, I mean, look, so, we can't escape competition. It's here, you know. I mean, competition is nature. So we can mitigate it and control it and make it safe, but it always kind of rears its head in some way, competition. You know?
So do you stay at a mansion or of some sorts when you're there? I always see these images of you in this fucking glorious, massive house in the hills of Rio de Janeiro.
No, it's interesting. That was actually in Costa Rica. Costa Rico.
Trying to masculinize everything, bro?
I have a friend named Costa Rico. You know?
No. His name is Costa Rico.
Costa Rica.
Rico of the Coast.
Oh, my
Costa
God.
Rica. Actually, I worked on a film in Costa Rica. It was really interesting. I got a
with
call.
With Costa Rico?
With Costa Rico, yeah.
What did you do on the film?
It was kind of a, I hate to say low budget, but it was a small budget film. They had a couple of big, like Randy Couture was in it, and Billy Zane was in it, and Dr. Drew Pinsky was in it. And,
well, was this the SWAT movie or the Navy SEAL movie?
No, it was. It's called Final Kill.
That's like definitely the title of the movie for
sure. Yeah.
Final Kill.
So it's a fun action film. You know, small budget action film.
No Dolph? No Dolph in this one?
No Dolph this time.
No Steven Seagal?
Unfortunately, no Dolph. What a gentleman Dolph is.
Brian's good pals with Dolph Lundgren over here.
I wish I was good pals with him. I did have some interaction, some positive interaction with him, you know?
Yeah.
Really, he's a nice guy.
Yeah. Brian, you seem like the kind of guy that can recite the Man in the Arena speech by just brain.
You give me too much credit.
So what were you, a producer on this film, or what were you doing?
No, it was interesting. I worked as, I guess my title would be second AC, but I actually got a chance. I did some stunt work in the film. I helped with some fight choreography in the film. So
awesome.
I ended up doing everything. I did some gaffing, and I did some gripping, and you know, it was just like, cool. We were kind of locked in this house, this beautiful mansion in Costa Rica. And, you know, the crew was kind of a skeleton crew. And we just made the best of what we had. And it was a great experience, super fun. I got to do a lot of cool things, you know, touch a lot of expensive equipment and kind of learned a lot. And
you guys want to watch the trailer?
It was fun. What's up?
Oh, there's a trailer for it?
I'm in the trailer, actually.
Let's see it. Let's see it, Chris.
All right.
I'm so excited. Billy Zane, I saw at a party with Nikki. You know Nikki.
Nikki.
I was watching Billy Zane. I guess you would say flirt with a nice woman who was bartending there.
Oh, really? He has to flirt, that guy? I didn't think he had to flirt with me that handsome.
Yeah, he's a. Did you get to hang out with Randy?
We actually came to the after party. We spoke. He's a great guy, man. He's a really nice guy. He was actually a ranger. He was in the army. So we kind of
was he?
We talked a little bit about that, and you know, we spoke a little bit about the police department. Does a lot of good things, that guy, for veterans. And he's a complete gentleman. Yeah, really nice guy.
That's awesome. Let's see you, Chris.
Sorry. I had to do some stuff, and I just want to make sure we're still recording and still going.
All right, cool.
It says recording in the top left.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Here is the trailer for Brian Zampella's Final Kill.
Well, it's not my final kill.
No, it's your fucking movie, bro. It's your movie. It's your fucking movie that you made.
No, right.
Mickey, I have asked you numerous times, what it is you do
is that fucking
living? No, so much of this anxiety.
Dude, that's my buddy Ed.
Remember I told you that I did something before I worked in the protection department? I worked in collections.
Do I know you, man?
Turn it down a little bit, Chris.
Best specialist I have.
What's going on, Les?
There he is!
Oh my god, that's Billy Zane?
Billy Z, son, yeah. Hell yeah!
Trujillo?
Nobody said this job was easy.
Couture?
Oh, Randy!
Wants to work, but somebody can't do it. She could have died.
We all could have died, that's the name of the game.
No, look, I can't live with myself if someone dies on my watch. Job ain't what it used to be.
Mickey. At very least, you have an anchor.
Dr. Drew?
The classic fridge kill.
Yeah.
Boom. So that was the house we stayed in. It was sick.
Wait, why did we see you, Brian? I missed it.
I was wearing the mask.
Can we get a freeze frame on Brian in the mask?
Yes, let's get Brian in the mask. He's in the beginning.
Was it the beginning, bro?
Yeah, it was like right after this, I think.
Yeah, there he is. It's like a friend.
That's you right there?
That's me, bro. Getting my ass kicked.
Oh my god.
Bam. Right there. Dude, those are your biceps and that green shirt that you always wear, if I've ever always seen it.
And that gun you always have, that's definitely not real.
Always.
That's awesome, man. That must have been a really fun time down there. I know you got sick too, right?
That was in Brazil, dude. I don't know what I had. I think I had dengue fever, bro. It was dengue fever. Dude.
What were your symptoms?
Nightmare, bro. What were my symptoms?
Loose butthole.
You want to know how much my symptoms were? What weren't my symptoms? How about that? What weren't my symptoms? Everything you could possibly think about that can go wrong in a human body went wrong, bro. Dude, I called my friend. God. Bro, I called my boys up. This is the funniest thing. So I called my Brazilian friends. And, you know, they speak English, but not great. And I'm just like, bro, I'm like, I'm so sick. And they're like, okay, guy, we come to the house, guy. I'm like, no, don't come here. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm so sick. So anyways, I have these, like, you know, these guys, like, show up at my house, you know, and they're like, they're debating whether or not what they're going to do with me. Like, one of them is like, we're going to bring him to the hospital. The other one's like saying, like, no, we're going to leave him here. We're going to get medicine. The other one's like, we're going to bring the doctor here. Then, like, the one kid's girlfriend's, like, screaming in Portuguese. She wants to bring me to the hospital. I can't move. I'm, like, laying there, like, you know, almost in a coma. Totally, totally messed up. So it was a whole, it was rough, bro. But I got over it.
How long were you in that condition?
Dude, I was sick for about 3 days, man. And it sucked, man. Because I was in an apartment. It was hot. Like, there really was no air conditioner. I was fucking sweating profusely. I barely had enough food. Thank God I had friends there that came and brought me some crackers and brought me some Pedialyte and Gatorade and stuff. Because it was bad, man. Actually, I was supposed to go to Africa after that. And then I ended up actually, for a few reasons, it was, but one of the main reasons were I just didn't feel good, man, for a while. Probably for about two or 3 weeks after that, I just didn't feel good. I just wasn't.
What were you
going
to do in Africa?
Dude, so I wanted to jump in the steel cage with the sharks.
What?
No, fuck that.
So, bro, this is crazy. So my uncle, who's actually a rocket scientist, he used to work for Lockheed Martin, great guy. He hits me up and he goes, hey, Brian, what are you doing? I was like, I'm in Brazil right now. I'm thinking about going to South Africa. He goes, what are you going to South Africa for? Because he had some time off from work. So he wanted to meet me somewhere. So I said, I want to go swimming with these great white sharks. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's on my bucket list, you know. It's my biggest fear. I'm fucking petrified of sharks. So he goes, did you hear about the orca whales, the killer whales? I go, no. He goes, man, he goes, there's no great white sharks there anymore. I go, what do you mean there's no great white sharks there? He goes, dude, they're not there anymore. And I'm like, all right, Uncle T, you know. So I hang up the phone. I'm thinking he's like fucking with me. I'm like, what do you mean there's no great white sharks in South Africa, bro? There's got to be great white sharks in South Africa. So apparently they're back now, but apparently a pod of orcas showed up off the coast of Cape Town and fucking, like, there were two brothers. One's name was Port and the other one's name was Starboard. And they fucking crushed a few great white sharks. And, like, they just, like, ripped their livers out and just, like, left their, like, their corpses, like, in the fucking ocean. So apparently, like, the sharks left. And I guess that's one of the reasons that they think why they left. Eventually they came back, but they were gone for a couple of months.
So what, the idea is, what did I do here?
You started sharing your screen.
How do I do that?
In the upper right hand corner, like where it says you are viewing the screen, red button, stop screen.
How dare you, Josh?
Stop share.
There you go.
How dare you, bro?
I don't know what I did there, but the idea is that they made an example of the gray white sharks, and then the other gray white sharks saw.
I was watching something that apparently they make. That's one, like, sharks can smell like the death. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they have a great sense of smell. So apparently, that's how they make shark repellent. Is like it smells like dead sharks. So if a shark from like if a shark smells the death of its own species, it won't go into that area. So apparently, that the great white sharks smelled the death of its own kind of species, and they left. They fled. for a little while. They didn't stay in that area.
I'm gonna show you guys something, and for our viewers, this is a little much. So I apologize in advance, but this is context for the story.
Okay, I'm a little nervous right now, but what are we, the Joe Rogan Experience over here?
So dozens of baby sharks were found dumped on Strandfontein Beach in Cape Town. Heads, fins, and tails had been cut off. They determined after a lengthy investigation that it was a black market sale of shark fin soup.
Yeah, so, I mean, I mean, they're sharks, whatever.
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
How dare you, bro? I'm just kidding.
But bro, you're like Shark Man instead of Batman. You're going to face your fucking fears. You're going to swim. You're like Batman, but you're Shark Man. If you successfully go swim with those sharks, you're going to become Shark Man.
Maybe. I mean, I thought so. Years ago, I was with my ex-girlfriend. We went swimming in Mexico, and we swam with like tiger nurse sharks. And they're frightening looking, but they're not man-eating. And I thought that I would be less scared, like swimming with these sharks. But dude, after I swam with them, I was actually more scared of sharks. Because I'm like, these things are fucking like civics. These are like civics, like swimming around. They're tremendous. They're so powerful, man. Like, I know this shark wasn't going to eat me, but if it wanted to, it totally could.
Yeah.
If it just got a little fucked up in the head for a second.
That's terrifying, dude. So do you know someone you would do that with, or you just would go to some random company?
I was just going to go alone, actually. I was just going to go there alone and just show up and kind of do it. It's just something I've kind of always wanted to do, and that's it. I've been petrified of sharks since I saw Jaws as a little kid.
That's so, usually what does it, man.
Dude, that
there's wow, so that many movie. People, I feel like, who have fear of sharks. Maybe that's why I don't have that. I mean, I definitely would be. I don't think I ever fully saw Jaws, no. But, I mean, obviously, yeah. I think just generally speaking, the ocean is terrifying to me. So I think it's more broad for me.
I mean, go on.
No, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll swim in the ocean, but I'm definitely not 100% comfortable. Like, I'm kind of
same.
Swimming, I'm kind of like looking around, and I'm kind of like, all right, like, what's going on? Right. I'm like,
hey,
I don't know, maybe it's time to leave, but like, maybe I'll stay. I'm always super aware.
What's your book about? Unless you're not trying to put it out there yet.
I mean, I don't want to go too much into it because I'm still kind of working it out, but it's about kind of inner dialogue and, you know, dialogical speech and kind of almost visualizing your inner dialogue as certain characters to motivate you and help you overcome certain obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of an integration of the two concepts. I don't want it to be a kind of a fun book, nothing too heavy.
Mm-hmm. Little Jackie Brown on there, sprinkle a little Jackie Brown.
Not that ridiculous, you know. Not that light. Not that insane.
Did you ever finish that pilot or whatever you were doing with that? Is there something that's that I can watch? I don't think I've ever seen any footage from that.
I mean, I have. It's like sitting there, but I've just never put it together. So
okay.
It's definitely something I want to kind of get into. I've been thinking about it a little bit, you know, here and there. And I still like jot down notes and like at some point I definitely want to revisit that whole thing for sure. Mm-hmm. You know?
Totally. So Brian,
what's up?
You've been an actor, a producer, a cop, a real estate person. Like why so many?
Oof, I think I'm just curious, man. I'm just super curious. Like there's so many things that I just want to experience and get involved in. And I kind of used to think of that as a detriment because I'm like, oh, I'm kind of like, I don't want to say like I'm a jack of all trades kind of guy. Like I can, you know, but I used to think of that as a detriment, but now I kind of see it as a good thing. I just want to get my hands on this, and as much stuff as I possibly can before I die. Not that I'm planning on dying anytime soon, but I just want to experience as much as I can.
Nice.
I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it just seems like, I mean, especially in my own life, like we're told that like you can be one thing and you've pivoted like five times and I'm assuming have found success because of what I've been told.
Well, now I'm going to school actually. And now I'm actually going to school I'd like to be a psychologist at some point. Hmm. So I'm finishing my bachelor's degree in psychology. I have this semester and probably one more semester and I'll graduate and then I'll kind of look into either getting into a master's program or a doctorate program. So that's a whole other pivot. I mean, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, man, I didn't know that.
Yeah, man, that's kind of a recent thing. When I was in Brazil and I was kind of writing my book, I found myself doing a lot of research on psychology and, you know, different things. So I said, this is pretty interesting. And then I just decided I went to Florida to see my father and my stepmother. And I was telling them about my book and my stepmother was like, why don't you go back to school? And I'm like, you know what? I just never liked the idea of school. I always had a negative relationship with school. But then I just started to kind of think about it a little bit more. And then I started to kind of look into school. And actually, I put in for one college and I didn't get in. So I'm like, all right, maybe it was a bad idea, Brian. But, you know. That was kind of a bad idea. So then I decided to apply for, I said, you know what, I'm going to apply for one more college because it was like maybe 2 weeks before the semester started. So I applied for a school. I got in and I'm like, I guess I'm doing this. So I was going to school. I felt like Adam Sandler and Billy Madison walking around. And, but it was fun. It was cool. You know, I was interacting with all these like kind of young kind of kids, you know, in a way. And it was interesting to hear their perspectives and I'm having debates with like 18-year-olds in school. And it was kind of fun. So now we've kind of gone to this remote learning platform, which is definitely not as fun, not as interesting, but it's keeping me busy because every day I'm doing a different paper. So getting bombarded with different papers. So yeah. I agree with what you're saying, Chris. It's interesting. Like you're supposed to kind of master one thing. You're supposed to just try and master one thing and then you retire and that's it. So I'm trying to not, I know I won't master anything, but I'm trying to experience as much as I can.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the reason I ask is like, I mean, especially with psychology, I mean, people very generally go into psychology because they're dealing with some sort of like personal stuff. And I was just wondering if, you know, your personal stuff was had anything to do with this. You know, I would want to be a psychologist after this trauma.
Oof. It was an abusive relationship, you know?
For people just listening, Chris just pulled up a picture of, must have been from one of the showcases we were in. Brian and I were in an acting class together many moons ago. And the picture is, how would you explain this? Me with white face paint, looking a bit elf. Like a vampire of sorts, choking the life out of Brian.
An elf vampire?
Elf vampire. That's right. Yeah, because I got the pointy ears.
Yes.
With a cheap, like $4.99 cape on from, from yeah. CBS.
Yeah.
Yeah. I left over from Halloween. But it was a good relationship, you know. It was a decent relationship, you know. It was somewhat abusive at times, but I made it through, and now I'm stronger. I'm stronger for it.
You know,
that's hilarious.
You definitely got through something. You know. Some people turn to psychology. Some people turn to music.
There you go. You know.
That's awesome. Go. This is explain this, Brian. What is this?
Man, that was great. We did it wasn't a showcase, but we did a scene from the Alien, right? Was it Covenant? Alien Covenant?
Was it Covenant or Prometheus?
No, it wasn't Prometheus. It was the sequel to Prometheus.
Alien Covenant.
Oh, okay. Got you.
Yeah. I played the what is he? He's an android?
Michael Fassbender's role, yes. He's David.
Yeah, I was David, and you were my maker. And I murdered you, right? Yeah.
I just want to say that. Let's get a little action right here on the no shoes.
I know,
dude. You managed to get together a pretty decent look, considering you know, what, you know, we didn't really have much to work with there.
No, no, not at all. I don't know. I was wearing, those are like, what are those? Those are like those tight Under Armour pants.
Yeah.
With some kind of a tight Under Armour fleece kind of thing. And I just blasted some powder on my face and that was it. I'm a robot.
For people just listening, it's a picture of Brian sitting at a desk with a keyboard, and his face looks very clean, like a newborn baby. Very symmetrical, very pretty, and he's got all
beautiful.
And I'm lying next to him, dead on the floor. What was the idea? You were playing. How did we ended the scene with you like going back to playing like Bach or something?
Yeah, it was like Bach or Mozart. No, you know who it was? Oh my God, it was what's the guy's name?
Debussy. Tchaikovsky.
No. I wish it was Debussy. I love Debussy. My boy, that's my morning music. That's my morning wake up music.
I think everyone should wake up with Debussy.
I there would probably be a better world. It would be a more peaceful place if
just moist Debussy.
Oh my God! Well, now I'm getting mad because who was that? That what was that? Oh, it wasn't Bach. Fuck.
Beethoven. Mozart.
Phil. What the hell is his name? Shit. I'm getting so mad right now. All right. We'll have to kind of, maybe it'll come to me. It's eluding me right now.
You know, I always like to think that our thoughts can be enhanced by being with other people, and we can kind of see where we're looking into with certain things. Wouldn't you agree, Brian?
Whoa, yowzes.
Dude. To this day, this is like one of my favorite photos I've ever shot of anyone. Dude, I love this fucking photo, dude.
Dude, it was pretty cool. It was a really cool. It was great. Really cool. That's awesome.
It's super creepy, but I love it.
Who are these twins?
That was a great shot.
Yeah. They're what?
No, I said it was a great shot. It was totally a great shot. It was just kind of like a spur of the moment thing, which is like a photo shoot. We just kind of put it together and it just kind of came out.
Yeah, we were just fucking around being weird. I love this shot.
Yeah, great shot. Great shot, bro. Great shot, man.
Great shot, bro.
Great shot, bro.
Yeah, look at that, dude. Look at that.
Just look at that boy.
A little Clockwork Orange inspiration there.
Definitely, for sure.
So, just a little bit. Nice, dude.
It's the content people want.
Yowzes.
Oh, boy.
Speaking of Randy Couture, 20 minutes ago, what are your thoughts on Fight Island? You think this is going to actually happen?
What the fuck is Fight Island?
So Dana White, we're going to talk UFC now. Dana White was going to, against the sort of, I guess, general wishes of the public, put on a fight this Saturday, Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje, who was filling in for Khabib, who pulled out because he's stuck in Russia. But I supposedly the higher-ups of Disney called Dana and said, no bueno, you're shutting it down. So the fight's off, but supposedly Dana has occupied some mysterious island where the UFC fights will take place at from now on until this is all over.
Yeah, I think they're gonna. I was just, I'm trying not to watch too much news, but I was just listening to my Governor Cuomo, and they're already starting to try to figure out some type of opening of the economy. So if there's a glimmer of opening, I'm sure Dana is going to try and put something together for sure. So I think it's going to happen. You know, absolutely, 100%, it's going to happen. We'll see. We'll have UFC events before we have any other sporting event. 100%.
It'll be kind of cool. It's kind of like Ali when he fought in Africa. You know, it's like a different, more exotic location from the standard, you know, fight town.
Dude, it's super cool. It was funny. What's his name? Stylebender said some funny shit. He was like, I'll fly to an island and fucking kick somebody's ass in front of the Illuminati. I don't care, you know?
That's something hilarious. Like that. Yeah, why is the Illuminati on the island?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Why is the Illuminati on the island?
I don't know. I guess he was just kind of being imaginative, you know? Like
sure.
He painted a really interesting picture, though. He's like, you know, I'll fly to some island and just kick somebody's ass in front of the Illuminati and bounce, you know? It's just a cool image, a style bender going over there and just fucking kicking somebody's ass, you know?
I guess the idea is...
They should repurpose Epstein Island as a UFC venue.
Make it positive, right?
Make it positive.
Dude, they need to, I don't know, what they need to hit that thing with a missile, you know?
What, Epstein Island?
They just need to hit it with a missile and just get rid of it. Just all that, whatever, that evil in the island, you know? Just fucking, just hit it with a tomahawk missile. And just fucking, like, I just picture it like a cartoon, you know? Like, like a missile, like, hits the island and the island sinks like a boat, you know?
Do we know where that island is?
I think it's off the coast of Costa Rica.
Really?
Oh, that's where you were, Brian. That's
on Epstein Island.
Yeah, you got sick in fucking
sick.
Man, dude, that's some dark. That's a dark, dark place, man. That's a dark, dark man. That Epstein.
Oh man.
That's weird, man. That's a whole weird thing. That's weird.
Isn't it kind of weird, even weirder, that there's logs of people who were associated with this man as far as spending time with him, at least traveling with him, and yet those people on those lists just have completely avoided, for the most part, attention in this.
Look at what happened with the fucking Panama Papers. I mean, there was dozens of people who were embezzling money in whole countries that were doing it, and absolutely nothing came of it.
It's absolutely like, unless you're caught, it doesn't matter.
No,
it's only legal if you get caught.
It's only legal if you get caught. And
you can kids, but we just don't want to know about it.
Catholic Church.
Even if you get caught, I think Epstein had been tried before, right? Didn't he beat a case or something?
Yeah, he beat a case. Yeah,
you know, I mean, who knows? But it's interesting. There was so many, you know, high powered people that had visited that island, and there's just no talk of it. But you know, you talk about you know, inequality, and you know, there is inequality. Like, you do have an elite class that can just pretty much do whatever the fuck they want, and then you have us. Everyone else is just kind of everyone else is just kind of fighting each other, you know, down here, while these people are just kind of doing whatever the fuck they want. It's interesting. And then they end up then somebody who can link a bunch of high powered people to some deviant shit just ends up dead, conveniently.
Supposedly.
I mean, I don't want to get too in-depth on that.
You know who I think did it? Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby? Probably.
Mm-hmm. Killed Epstein?
Yeah, of course.
I wouldn't put anything past that guy. Dude,
slipped him,
man.
Some Jell-O.
Dude, you know what's so funny? My grandfather loved Bill Cosby so much. And like, he always watched like anything Bill Cosby, and like I like, so when I was a kid, like, we had to watch the Bill Cosby show, and I just always had this this great vision of Bill Cosby just being this wholesome kind of
everyone guy. Did
it sucks, man, because there was a couple of I there's some time that I spent with my grandfather watching Bill Cosby, and and now it's kind of like, fuck you, Bill Cosby, why'd you have to turn out like that, man?
Yeah.
Sucks. It's like betrayal. That's the one thing it's like, when you're betrayed, it sucks, man. It totally sucks.
I was a big Epstein guy until I found out.
Oh, yeah, I know. You had his poster in your room. I remember that. I was like, who's this guy, Josh?
He ate Epstein-O's every morning, drank Epstein juice.
Yeah. Big Epstein guy. I'm hungry, boys. You guys got anything else?
No, I'm good.
Bro, I'm living.
Brian, you got anything?
Dude, I just want to say, like, right now I'm living on cereal. Thank God for cereal.
What kind of cereal are you talking about, Brian?
Bro, I got everything, man. I get the Kashi cereal that's, like, it's, like, not healthy, but it's kind of healthy. But, like, they have, like, the like, remember, like, Sugar Smacks and, like, Apple Jacks, but they've kind of created, like, a healthy version of it. Yeah. So it makes me feel good, but it still has, like, sugar, and it still has, like, all the same things, but it's kashi, so I feel better about it. It's, like, shredded wheat, but it's still, like, has, you know, it's, like, mm-hmm. just, like, a healthier version. I mean, just, dude, anything I can get my hands, any cereal I can get my hands on, I'll eat right now.
Organic marketing?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Organic marketing. I don't, who knows if it's healthier. I'm sure it's a little bit healthier, but not much. But as long as it says kashi, I'll eat it. And copious amounts. I mean, it sucks because I'll go through a box, and I'll just literally go through a box in a day.
First line of your book. 3 days in, I had consumed copious amounts of kashi, and I no longer knew who I was.
Dude, literally, bro. Literally. Thank God for fucking cereal. Whoever invented cereal is just, what an amazing human being, man.
He's not a good guy.
Cereal's... I pivoted yeah. more to granola. I'm more of a granola guy these days. Really? Granola with some goat fucking yogurt, some nice goat yogurt, a little honey, and then you throw in some granola clusters with maybe, if you're lucky, a little chocolates hidden in there somewhere.
I blast walnuts in there.
Just so you know, the guy you invented. Okay.
I blast walnuts in everything, bro. Fucking I blast rainy. Walnuts in yogurt, fucking oatmeal, whatever. I just blast
women.
Walnuts.
He blasts walnuts and women too. Yeah, he's been known to blast walnuts and women.
Whatever I get my hands on, I'll blast a walnut. You, Josh, I'll get my hands on you. You're just fucking fast, though.
I'll fucking get a walnut at you so quick, bro.
Bro, he's fucking so quick, fast. Bro.
Dude, I'm too fast so, for walnuts, bro.
Dude, he's so agile and fast. It'd be difficult.
It'd be a Brazil nut. They're more aerodynamic.
Exactly.
Follow Brian on Instagram at BZman83 and his new Instagram, which is going to be sort of his philosophical rantings, right?
Yeah, rantings, just kind of weird little abstract things I think about. We'll see how that kind of plays. And I'm still just playing with everything right now. But
at @the_mad_thinker is his new Instagram. Go follow him there too. He's got one post so far, but it is worth seeing.
There'll be a graphic right there.
Yeah, man. Thank you, pal.
You're welcome. Appreciate it.
Dude, it was fun to see your face, man. Thanks for doing this.
Dude, it was nice meeting you, too. It was nice. I already met you. I know you, Josh. But Chris, it was nice meeting Chris, man.
Nice meeting you, too, bro.
We got to get into more of a deep conversation one of these days, you know?
Yeah.
Something serious. But I'm glad we kind of ended light, you know? It was fun. It was a good experience. Thank you guys for having me on. Much appreciated.
Yeah.
Dude, come back on anytime, and maybe we'll get a specific topic that we can go deeper dive into if you like.
Absolutely. Let's get weird, bro.
Oh, if you're willing to get weird.
Dude, let's get weird, bro. Just, you know, let's get weird, man. We got to get warmed up off fucking like without recording, then hit record when we're hot and heavy.
You're right. That's a good technique.
Yeah.
We're going to get so weird that we're going to have one of these.
Oh, bro. Well, we might get so weird and not even hit record, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Ah!
What we did to poor Nick. Dude, that was a good night, man. We did some cool shit, bro. We did some cool stuff, Josh.
Yeah, man. So for people just listening, we have a picture of our actor friend Nikki submerged in a tub of water with fake blood all over his forehead and a phone, a prop phone. Sort of floating by his chest, and that must be Aaron right there with the camera.
What a trooper, man.
Yeah. So Brian and I have had a few creative endeavors together. Actually, if it wasn't for Brian, I don't know if I ever would have gotten into script writing. I wrote my first feature alongside Brian, and we also wrote a short together, and we started production on the film until I fucked it all up.
I had partnered too, bud. You know. Was a it's a spectrum, bro. You know,
no,
not black and white, man. There's a lot of gray.
You're right. There's shades. There's shades here.
There was a lot of faults. You know, a lot of faults to go around. Plenty of fault to go around. We'll put it that way.
We did get some pretty cool footage though that night.
Dude, Nick was a trooper, man. What a fucking trooper. That poor guy was in a tub and getting blasted over the head with a fucking phone. He's the man. He's the man. And just selling the shit out of him.
Yeah, it was incredible. I actually, I still have all that footage from that night. So one of these days, I'm going to put it together and blast it out to you.
That would be fun. Yeah, that's
classic. What I can do is the scene prior to that where was it Monique? Is that her name? Mystique? Monique?
Angelique.
Angelique, sorry.
How
so
dare
sorry.
You, bro? One of my favorite actresses.
My apologies.
Angelique Monique
from South Africa, actually, man.
Yeah, she was swimming with sharks, and we yanked her out of the ocean and made an actress out of her.
Great.
But Angelique, we in the scene where she's sort of having a daydream nightmare sort of situation, yeah. imagining Nikki blasting Jika.
With walnuts?
Oh my god! Oh my god, dude, that was wow! Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I still have that footage, and it's actually fucking fire. And then I can cut that together all the way through her walking down the hall and then bursting into the bathroom and throwing the phone at Nikki's head.
Dude, that was a fun night of independent filmmaking.
Yeah, I think we all learned a lot at the very least.
We went to fucking battle that night. Literally battle.
It was fun.
But you guys didn't learn though. Her name.
I learned
no,
it. This guy
no,
isn't knowing.
That's my fault.
That was a bad person. Angelique, man.
Angelique, right. Mystique Angelique.
All right, gentlemen. How are you? You two handsome devils.
Dude, thank you again for doing this. We were stoked to talk to you. And let's do a deeper dive one of these days.
Yeah.
Deeper dive.
Dude, fucking stay safe over there, man.
Yeah.
Dude. Let me tell you, bro, you don't have to worry about me, man. I'm not
You got your cashy. You got your fucking tea. Bro, you got I'm your not, fucking notebook.
Got dude. Your bathrobes.
Dude, that's all I need is a rope, a fucking, what is this thing called? A notebook?
Nope. That's why he's going to school.
Kashi cereal, and... That's it,
and a poster of Jeffrey Epstein, and you're good to go.
And a poster of Jeffrey Epstein. Actually, I got my fucking Muhammad Ali poster, bro. For some
there you go.
There you go, bro.
Just is that the Rumble in the Jungle? What is that? Oh, that's
no, this is, dude. This is actually, bro, like very underrated fighter, man. Ken Norton, man. Dude, it's signed. It's actually signed by Ken Norton.
Wow.
Oh wow. Oh, that yeah, is that the dude you met?
No. I mean, I met Marvelous Marvin Hagler.
Oh, that's right.
But Ken Norton, man, is a great fighter. He actually beat Ali, and I think they fought three times, I believe. And I think actually, probably you could argue that Ken Norton beat Ali three times, or every time they fought. I'd have to check how many times they actually fought, but they fought a few times. And I believe that that Ken Norton, you could make the argument that Ken Norton got the best of him. Great, great fighter.
Wow.
I feel like he just doesn't get. He doesn't get brought up enough. He's, you know, you hear about Frazier, you hear about Ali, but you don't hear about Ken Norton. And Ken Norton was just a fantastic fighter. Fantastic, man.
Was really he a champion?
Interesting style. Yeah, I believe he was a champion for sure. And this kind of like interesting kind of cross style. He would kind of go like this, like when he was coming out. Really, really just funky, kind of awkward style.
Do we have any footage, Chris?
That's what I'm looking for right now.
I fucking knew it. Young Chris over here.
Bah, boom,
bro.
Uncle Chris.
That's Uncle I have two Chris. Of those.
I think I'm going to stop you? Calling you Uncle Chris.
Two are, Uncle Chris.
That's my
yeah.
term of endearment.
Yeah, it really is.
Right,
young, that's... agile Uncle Chris.
Agile. All right.
There he is, man.
Ken Norton, the Black Hercules.
Fucking stud, bro.
Oh. Little Sting as the background music.
Sting?
Oh, come on, Sting. That's fucking Phil Collins.
Phil Collins. Bro. Sorry.
Wow, dude.
Angelique, Mystique, Phil Collins, Sting.
Dude, you can get Angelique's name wrong, but you get Phil Collins wrong, I will fart for LA.
And it's a Tupac song.
I'm on Cape Cod, bro. I'm on Cape Cod.
Oh, you're in the Cod?
I'm on the Cod.
Oh, good. I'll drive there.
Yeah. Come, if you need a place to hide out, bro, you're welcome.
Thanks, pal.
I can buy some Kashi for you.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Oh,
yikes.
Yowzes.
He's got a really good right overhand.
He's so awkward, so strong, so fast. Dude, he put a combination on our lady. I mean, he put a few on him, but oof. Wow. You got to see some of these fights are great.
Here we go.
You have Dazen. You can watch him on Dazen. They have a few of his fights.
Dazen?
Or DAZN, whatever. Dazen, DAZN.
Yeah, Simmer's is on here.
Boom. This is it, right? Boom.
He's kicking the shit out of him.
Dude, let me tell you, man, I think you could arguably say that he beat Ali. I think he beat him once, and definitely not the best of him.
Those shots he was getting on Ali, though, I mean, it was kind of hard for me to see. Maybe the connection is better for you guys, but it was all very blurry and jumpy for me. But they kind of reminded me of Connor and Floyd a little bit, because Connor was getting some decent shots on Floyd for a couple rounds.
Yeah.
But, you know, Floyd was always covered up and not taking, you know, he was never really getting hurt. You're just kind of standing still taking it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Ali's a great fighter. He's a tough guy. He, you know, he covers up. He kind of does that rope-a-dope kind of thing. And but, I mean, dude, I would not want Ken Norton swinging, like, even, like, getting punched in the arms and getting punched, you know, that's, he's still getting just pummeled by a powerful person. So, check out the fights, though. But it's cool. I'm glad I actually mentioned Ken Norton, because I just feel like he just doesn't get the respect that he deserves, you know? And what an exciting fighter, man. I'm glad I got to mention that.
Barigapod's going to make Ken Norton. We're going to put his poster right next to Jeffrey's on the next episode.
That's it, man. So
I'm going to fucking buy a poster of Jeffrey Epstein right now.
No. We can't do that.
Just to have it. Get yourself a sword,
bro.
I want a sword, man. Everybody's telling me to buy a gun, and I'm like, no, I want a fucking katana or something.
Oh my god,
a sword, bro.
Is that a what do you call it? Like a jousting sword?
Yeah, it's a fencing sword.
Fencing sword?
Is it a saber or an epee?
Have you used to fence, right?
No, I wish I used to fence.
I don't know why I have a memory of you fencing.
Dude, you know what? If you have a memory of me fencing, just keep that
keep
memory,
it.
Bro.
Keep it.
Keep it, bro. I was a fucking fencer. All
right, let's wrap it up.
I got to pee and I got to eat.
Yeah.
Don't make pee-pee, bro. Make pee-pee. Sit down and pee.
Yeah, bro.
Brian, I just want to say, Brian, I know that you don't like me, but one of these days, Brian, we're going to have a conversation, and you're going to know what I'm really trying to do. And maybe you'll be my right-hand man, and together we'll be the balanced, cohesive unit that this nation needs to look between the white and the black and right into the gray matter.
Bro, maybe, man.
That's what America needs. Bernie Sanders with running mate Brian Zampella.
You know what, man? I would love to have a conversation with Bernie Sanders. I kind of talk to him. But, you know.
Trump's going to win again, right?
What'd you say? Yeah, he's going to win 100%. 100% he's going to win. No way. Unless they get rid of Biden and try to put Cuomo in, but I...
Can they do that? Can you do that at this point?
I think they could. Dude, I mean, anything's possible. I think they could do that. But I don't know, man. I don't know. But even Cuomo, bro, he's susceptible, dude, because New York State really wasn't prepared for this. I mean, you could blame the federal government all you want, but at the end of the day, the way this country set up is that each state is kind of supposed to be prepared, especially New York State. I mean, you would think we're the number one target for terrorism, that they would be a little more set up for this sort of thing. So I don't, like I said, I don't know the workings of it, but I can see how, you know, he's kind of this looked at as this knight right now in shining armor. And, you know, he's up there and he's delegating and he's doing a great job. He's a great orator and everything like that. But at the end of the day, there was, you know, he did have to get, he did need some assistance from the federal government. And, you know,
Yeah, but is there an example of a state that is like sort of the, is there a state that you've seen that's handling this like the, that was prepared for this? You know, is there an example of someone who's handled this well?
No, I don't think so. But I would say that New York State is a little bit different. I would say that if any state would be able to handle something like this, it would be New York State, because we've already been the victim of numerous terrorist attacks. So you would think that they would have. Look, dude. When I say this, very light-handedly, because this is a very difficult thing to deal with. But what I'm saying is that they're putting a special highlight on Governor Cuomo right now. And I just think that if there was, if they were to run against each other, Cuomo and Trump, I think Trump could exploit certain things about Cuomo's handling of the situation. And I'm sure Cuomo could try to exploit some of Trump's things. So I don't know if he's a better candidate, is what I'm trying to say, than Biden. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Oh, come on, dude. Come on, bro. Cuomo, anyone's better than Biden. Anyone.
I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to be diplomatic, right? Biden, I'm trying to be diplomatic here.
Bro, I mean, it's not even about being nice. It's just like the differences that Cuomo can speak. That's all. That's.
Well, Cuomo is a great orator, man. He's a great orator.
Yes.
He's
up there. And Biden literally is dying every day.
Literally, he's dying every day. But you know, at the end of the day, it's like, dude, you know, what are these? I mean, who's solving this problem? It's the free market. It's ingenuity from the free market who's doing this. Who's building all these ventilators? And is it, you know, like, who? I don't know, man. I don't know. What are these people really doing? They're up there kind of just looking good, and while other people are working their asses off, and they're taking credit for a lot of things. I'm not saying that they shouldn't get some credit, absolutely. But there's a lot of people who should be getting credit for this. You know, you got a lot of engineering going on. You got a lot of other small people that are busting their ass, and you got the people on top that are going to take all the credit for this. And it's many things. Go on.
I just want to know, did Andrew Cuomo wrestle?
Dude, I don't know. If he wrestled, I
it might change your opinion on him.
It might change my opinion of him. And who knows, he might even have my vote.
I think that's a great place to end the podcast, because I have to
pee. Wait. Before you can go pee, but before you go pee, play this thing I just sent you, Chris. Did you see this, Brian? It's Bill Maher posted this about how people are so up in arms about Trump calling this the China virus how hypocritical all that shit is.
Have you
seen this video?
I didn't see the video, but
I can pull it up.
I think I saw a quote. I think I saw a quote from it.
Watch this video, and we'll end on this, and then we'll have a brief talk about it afterwards. But watch this real quick.
Okay.
It's pretty great.
All right, cool.
Get ready for the volume.
Well, you can't yell at someone for breaking a rule you just made up.
Perfect.
Scientists, who are generally pretty liberal, have been naming diseases after the places they came from for a very long time. Zika is from the Zika forest. Ebola from the Ebola River. Hantavirus, the Hantan River. There's the West Nile virus and guinea worm and Rocky Mountain spotted fever and, of course, the Spanish flu. MERS stands for Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. It's plastered all over airports and no one blogs about it. So why should China get a pass? Congressman Ted Lieu tweeted, "The virus is not constrained by country or race. Be just as stupid to call it the Milan virus." No, that would be way stupider, because it didn't come from Milan. And if it did, I guarantee we'd be calling it the Milan virus. Jesus fucking Christ, can't we even have a pandemic without getting offended? When they named Lyme disease after a town in Connecticut, the locals didn't get all ticked off. ticked off.
Boo.
Seriously, it scares me that there are people out there who would rather die from the virus than call it by the wrong name. This isn't about vilifying a culture. This is about facts.
It's Hold about on a life moment. And death. Is it a thing of Mao in the background?
Yeah, I noticed that too when I watched it.
Wow, very perceptive.
Yeah, so what's... I was trying to figure out what that is all about.
It might be a green screen behind him. But let's find
out.
We're barely 4 months into this pandemic. And the wet markets in China, the ones where exotic animals are sold and consumed, are already starting to reopen. The PC police say it's racist to attack any cultural practice that's different than our own. I say liberalism lost its way when it started thinking like that and pretended that forcing a woman to wear this was just a different way instead of an abhorrent human rights violation. It's not racist to point out that eating bats is batshit crazy.
Yeah.
In 2007, researchers at the University of Hong Kong wrote, "The presence of a large reservoir of SARS-CoV like viruses in horseshoe bats, together with the culture of eating exotic animals in southern China, is a time bomb." Dr. Fauci says we should force a global closure of the wet markets because the current crisis is a, quote, direct result of them. On Monday, the UN's acting head of biodiversity said the same thing. So when someone says, what if people hear Chinese virus and blame China? The answer is we should blame China, not Chinese Americans. But we can't stop telling the truth because racists get the wrong idea. There are always going to be idiots out there who want to indulge their prejudices. But this is an emergency. Don't we have bigger tainted fish to fry? Jesus, if the sun was exploding, Twitter would pile on the first guy who called it a dwarf star. Sorry, Americans. We're going to have to ask you to keep two ideas in your head at the same time. This has nothing to do with Asian Americans, and it has everything to do with China. We can't afford the luxury anymore of non-judginess towards a country with habits that kill millions of people everywhere, because this isn't the first time. SARS came from China, and the bird flu, and the Hong Kong flu, the Asian flu. Viruses come from China like shortstops come from the Dominican Republic.
Jesus Christ.
If they were selling nuclear suitcases.
That's enough.
You want me to respond about that?
No, I mean, I just wanted you guys to see it. I thought it was very, I don't know if he, I'm sure he's got writers and stuff. I don't know if he comes up with all those ideas himself. But thought it was a fair conversation to be had and an important one. It's just the hypocrisy and like the just like the amnesia of history when it comes to this kind of stuff, you know.
I'm going to remove myself from this conversation because I am going to pee.
So yeah.
Keep at it.
Go make pee-pees. Oof. People are just—they're not making distinctions. They need to make distinctions more. I mean, when you talk about China, you're not talking about a race. You know, like people already, you're racist for calling it the Chinese virus. It's like, dude, it's like he's saying, it's a lot of viruses are called after geographical or named after geographical locations that they emanated from. So it's just weird. But it's everybody wants to either it's just trending to be a victim or to be calling somebody a racist, and that term racist has encompassed a lot of things, and it's been, in my opinion, it's been somewhat diluted, and that's a term that really shouldn't be diluted. That's a term that we should really be careful. When you call someone a racist, that should be, you should be take a lot of care when you call somebody a racist. It's right now, it's like everything's racist and it just kind of gets thrown around. And I think that that's a term that should be reserved for things that are really racist.
Right.
It's like, cause now you're just watering things down. You're calling everything racist. I mean, like China is not a race. That's a nationality. That's not a race, and we're in competition with that country. So, you know, you have to be able to engage in discourse with that country and not have members of your own country calling you a racist. You know, you should be identifying as an American. You're an American. People need to start identifying more as Americans. I mean, it's all fun and games. I identify that I'm Irish. I identify that I'm Italian. But at the end of the day, like, I'm American, you know? Like, you could, it's fun to identify as being Chinese, and it's fun to be identify as being Korean, and that's great, and you should do that. That's great. But at the end of the day, you're also American. So we need to start, we all need to start identifying as Americans, because in the future, all of these, we'll forget where we're from. We'll forget where our ancestors are from, and we'll be American.
Right.
You know, we're all going to.
Yeah, because America is still so new.
You know, it's interesting. I just want to say one thing about this. I'm actually taking African-American studies, and it's a great class, man. I love it. My teacher's amazing. It's super interesting. It's a great thing to learn about. And, you know, I'm not a complete expert about that, about it, but in Brazil, I don't know if this is the truth, but there's a lot of integration. And when you go to Brazil, everyone's Brazilian, even though they come, a lot of them are Portuguese and a lot of them are African and, you know, come from Africa and they have other kind of backgrounds, but they're very proud to be Brazilian. There's integration started. It's seemingly very early there. For us in America, integration, you know, there was segregation up until like the 1960s, 70s. I mean, you could even argue that there's segregation now. So there really hasn't been like enough integration. So there's a lot of people that are kind of, they're not like, we're not like a cohesive Americans yet. And I think that we should be. And I think the faster that we become cohesive Americans, the more peace there'll be in America. I don't know if I articulated myself correctly.
No, you did a great job. I think that's a great way to end the podcast. It's a very fair point and something that people should consider. So I'm proud to be an American. With Mystique and Jeffrey Epstein. All right, that's enough.
I love everyone.
This is a podcast I definitely want to be associated with.
Come visit me in Queens.
Goodbye, everybody.
Not anytime soon, Brian. Not anytime soon.
Uncle Chris.
Yes, later. Sir. Later.
Great meeting you, man. Take care.
Meeting you too.
Thank you. Thank you for all the tech support.
Yeah, of course, man.
Peace out, Brian. Good seeing your face.
Peace.